Hello listeners and welcome to our podcast about the restrictions that were faced by the Aboriginal people. I'm Caitlin and this is Yashasvi.
Hi, thanks for listening.
Well, let's start at the very beginning. Ever since the first fleet came to Australia in 1787, Aboriginals have been discriminated and not even seen as human. They were treated differently and were considered a dying race due to the fact they had been on the land for over 60,000 years. From the late 1800s and 1970s, they were forcibly removed from their families in order to diminish their culture from existence. This time in history is called the Stolen Generation.
It was believed that the Aboriginals would die out, and so the white government was protecting the children by placing them into a white society. A generation with thousands of Aboriginal children were taken away from their families and placed into white families or into state care. Full-blooded Aboriginals were also removed from their families and placed into a state-run institution, where they were prepared for skilled or semi-skilled work.
How were the children in that time period treated, you may ask? Were there any everlasting effects of this exclusion?
They weren't the only ones mistreated. Every single Aboriginal person was treated a certain way, poorly, but differently. The children were taken away from their families and told that they were neglected children. Many were wrongly told that their parents had died or abandoned them, and many never knew where they had been taken from or who their biological families were. These children were physically and psychologically traumatized. Some were also sexually abused.
In order to put a face to this event, we researched the website called The Stolen Generation Testimonies, which provided us with the story of Barbara Kickett, who was 9 years old when she was taken away from her family. Her story was given a chance to surface the media in 2009. She explained, "That's all I think about, is the pain, because it was just unbelievable stuff. The beatings that you got on the mission from the missionaries, so-called Christian people. The Indigenous children and their respective families faced terrible outcomes from this decision."
Going back to the question of whether any of these effects of this exclusion were long-lasting, we found out some more information about Barbara. When asked about being removed with her parents, she wasn't able to speak about it. Even after 50 years, the pain was still too raw to talk about it.
Something like that sounds extremely traumatic.
Speaking of trauma, throughout the years, the Australian government has implemented many policies regarding or affecting Indigenous people, all of which have been said were for their own good. We will speak of two of them today. The White Australia Policy and the Immigration Restriction Policy. Both of these policies were not in favour for the Aboriginal people. Starting off with the White Australia Policy. It was a policy which excluded everyone who did not have a European background. And even if they did have a European background, the entrance tests were so harsh and difficult, it was near impossible to get into the Australian boundaries legally.
Criticism of non-white groups were based on the idea that they were less advanced than white people in all ways, especially morally and intellectually. Due to this belief, Australia as a nation dreamt of an ideal society of people with only white background, well-paid, male, white, and skilled labour force. Non-whites, and even sometimes working women, were seen as a threat to this ideal.
By 1947, only 2.7% of the whole population was born outside of Australia, Ireland, or the United Kingdom. The effect of most obvious on the Asian population. Though only 1.25% of the Australian population in 1901, it had shrunk to around 0.21% by the late 1940s.
In order for the White Australia policy to work, the government had to implement the Immigration Restriction Act. It was brought into law on the 23rd of December 1901 and was since a strict code for Australia to follow. In order to enter Australia as a migrant, they had to sit a 50-word dictation test. The examiner could make immigrants sit the test in any European language the examiner desired. It didn't matter if the immigrant didn't speak that language.
Even if someone initially passed the English test, they could be made to sit in a succession of different languages until they failed. Naturally, white British migrants were not made to sit the test at all.
In 1937 and 1938, the processes of segregation and assimilation were put in place. Segregation was a mean to prevent Aboriginal people from fully participating in society, and assimilation was to make someone or something become part of a group, country, or society. The ideas of assimilation, segregation, and the stolen generation were what restricted Aboriginals in being able to express who they truly were and where they belonged.
Implementation of segregation was visible in the society through copious ways. One of such public discrimination was the introduction of colour bars. These bars had bans against Aboriginal people from entering clubs, pubs, swimming pools, restaurants, theatres, or even using public transport. Aboriginal reserves and missions were established by the government and religious organisations across Australia to support the assimilation policy. The advertised reason for segregation was about the benefits it posed for both the Aboriginal and white society, although the real reason was to separate the black society from the white. This policy lasted until the 1960s. During the time, they were prohibited from working certain jobs and were made to work for less salary.
The assimilation policy was put in place because if these people didn't just die out, then they would be integrated into white society. The policy was officially adopted in 1937 and lasted until 1973.
Since 2007, fair rights have been put in place for Native Australians. Referring to the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous People in Australia, found on the Australian Government website, we have chosen one or two from each category and that we think is important to talk about. These categories cover foundational rights, life and security rights, language, culture and spiritual identity, education, information and employment, self-governance.
Starting off with the foundation rights category, I thought that Article 2, titled Equality and Freedom Against Discrimination, was the most important, as Indigenous Australians are the same as everyone else, they are human.
I completely agree, but I think Article 1, titled Collective and Individual Human Rights, is also important. Both articles are similar in meaning, but I believe that everyone should have equal rights.
True. Next, we've got the Life and Security section. What do you think is the most important point made in this said section?
I feel that Article 8, titled Freedom from Assimilation and Destruction of Culture, is the most important, as it states that Indigenous peoples and individuals have the right not to be subjected to be forced assimilation or destruction of their culture. And since this has happened and it had a drastic effect on the Aboriginals, I think it's good that they specifically state that assimilation is wrong. How do you feel about this article?
I agree with your opinion and have the same opinion. I think that having this article in the rights of Indigenous people is great. I also agree that it's righteous that they specify assimilation. But I also think what's awesome about this is that the government has recognised this as wrong and has done something to change it.
That's a great thought. I didn't think about that. So, what about language, culture and spiritual identity? I think that Article 11, Culture and Cultural Property, is significant in this situation. It underlines that Indigenous peoples have the right to practice and revitalize their culture, cultural traditions and customs.
I agree that this is a major article in this category, but I think what you're saying about Article 11 includes the right to maintain, protect and develop the past, present and future manifestations of their cultures, such as archaeological and historical sites, artifacts, designs, ceremonies, technology, and visual and performing arts and literature.
Okay, what's your opinion on education, information, and employment? Because I think that Article 14 and 17 was significant for me. That Indigenous peoples have the right to establish and control their education systems and institutions providing education in their own languages in a manner appropriate to their culture, methods of teaching and learning, that under the employment and working conditions, Indigenous individuals have the right not to be subjected to any discriminatory conditions of labour and, inter alia, employment or salary.
Yes, I believe they're important, although for self-government, I think Article 33, determining our identities, Indigenous people have the right to determine their own identity or membership in accordance with their customs and traditions. This does not impair the right of Indigenous individuals to obtain citizenship of the states in which they live. I don't know about you, but I would love to talk about an all-inclusive participation topic, protests. The first one I would like to talk about is the one that happened in 1888. the 100th anniversary of British colonisation in Australia. This event wasn't really a protest, but more like a meeting that turned out to be quite successful for the Indigenous people. The meeting was the first really effective all-Indigenous civil rights meeting in Australia's history.
I found that one wasn't as interesting as the 1938 conference that was held in Sydney. It was the first Aboriginal protest against inequality, dispossession of land, and protectionist policies. We have been able to find a speech made by a group of Aboriginals from a government resource that contains the word "We," representing the Aborigines of Australia, assembled in conference at the Australian Hall, Sydney, on the 26th of January, 1938. This being the 150th anniversary of the white men's seizure of our country, hereby make protest against the callous treatment of our people by the white men during the past 150 years. And we appeal to the Australian nation to today to make new laws for the education and care of Aborigines. We ask for a new policy which will raise our people to full citizen status and equality within the community.
This speech may have been slightly biased, as it was said by the group of people that were treated unfairly, but I understand that they were trying to make it look like the white person is essentially the bad guy. I also believe that this speech is of national importance, as the position that they were in at that moment meant that everyone should have known how they were being treated. The 26th of January is Australia Day, marking the anniversary of the First Fleet's arrival in Australia. Most, if not all, Australians would know this. However, the 26th of January for the Aboriginals also marks the day white people came into their country and took over. This day is significant for both, for marking the same but different important time in history. In 1938, Aboriginals were still struggling when the First Fleet came, since they had very little and unfair rights. Now we have learnt from our mistakes. Aboriginals may have different rights, but they do help them through life now. Aboriginals that were taken from their families during the Stolen Generation still bear the scars of what they faced when they were younger, even now.
I see where you come from, although I think it's important to mention that when assimilation was adopted, they were made to be integrated with the white society and were not allowed to do certain things. The next year they protested about it. In 1937, the process of assimilation was adopted. This led to the Stolen Generation. A year later, the Day of Mourning started. People protested about their rights, since they were being treated unfairly by everyone.
Some people might wonder if our sources are reliable. Well, it was created at the time of the event, and the informant was just sharing their opinion and protesting in what they believe in. But going back to the which protest is more interesting, I think a march consisting of 40,000 people, some Indigenous Australians, some not, far more fascinating. A protest that was a statement of the Aboriginal survival. They were demonstrating that even though Australian history had excluded the Indigenous' voice, Aborigines, as the original inhabitants of Australia, were not going to be beggars in their own country.
Alright, that is more interesting than the one I came up with. However, there have been two recent protests, one in 2015 and one in 2017. Thousands and thousands of people protested around Australia against the planned closure of around 150 remote Aboriginal communities in WA in 2015. In 2017, Clinton Prior arrived at the Parliament House in Canberra after walking 5,800 kilometres from Perth. Clinton Prior was also called Spirit Walker. He had done this journey to highlight the situation of Aboriginal people and meet the Prime Minister to present a list of complaints about the state of Aboriginal affairs.
The reason these protests took place over the years is due to the restrictions faced by the Aboriginal Australians. These restrictions were problematic, as they confined them to a set of rules that they had to follow.
Well, I guess that's it for today. We covered the Stolen Generation, the White Australia Policy, the Immigration Restriction Act, segregation and assimilation, the rights of Indigenous Australians, and the major protests that have happened.
Thanks for listening. I'm Caitlin, and this is Yashasvi. Bye!
Goodbye.